NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because,
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Meet Janice. Unfortunately, her thing is sneeze attacks every time spring returns.
I literally sneezed 40 times in a row once.
Luckily for Janice, at the Walmart pharmacy, she can get over-the-counter allergy relief for things like sneezing, runny nose, and watery eyes fast with online pickup or delivery.
No more suffering? That's nothing to sneeze at.
I see what you did there. Help survive allergy season with fast online pickup or delivery from Walmart. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart.
Today, a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. This was a presentation at the SMB online conference about being topical, covering some of the topics from this show, presented so you listeners can get to listen to it too. And now, being topical. I'm trying to look for trends and direction that you can leverage in your business, things you need to know about, be warned about, find out about. It's available on all the podcatchers. All the links are at mspradio.com. So today, what I'm going to actually talk about is four categories of stories that I care about. And I'm going to tell you about two categories of stories I don't care about and why. Now, I'm also happy to dive in deeper on these topics or anything you want to. I do intend this for it to be interactive, so I'm keeping an eye on the Q&A section as I go. I'm going to start with anybody who's been listening to my stuff or killing it or watched any of my YouTube videos knows that I am like nuts on this idea of big tech and ethics. And let me tell you why. The background on this is, and I can pull these stories at any particular time. This is a set of December ones. I could go find ones right now. This is pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, still totally there. Big tech companies. Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, in some cases Microsoft, but a lot less so, are doing a great job of burning away the public's trust in technology. These are favorites of mine because for a long period of time, I was always talking about how NATO and cybercrime had labeled cybercrime and invasions as the same as an act of war in the NATO space. And I thought that was a really important movement. NATO did a bunch of research and then went out and did a four-month experiment on manipulating social media and found like a 95% failure rate for all of the big tech companies in terms of catching it. Like just completely, they were able to go in there and buy media, social engagement, and completely put out misinformation of any kind. Cambridge Analytica is the poster child for Facebook. It's actually in some ways kind of one of the only medium of interest ones. I'm way more interested in some of the stuff they're doing around the way moderation is failing, and the way that they just in the past week or had to settle with their moderators in terms of the PTSD damage it's done to mental health. There's all kinds of stuff that's going on right now from a really big picture. Why is this a matter? Let's get into some of the why. Like, traditionally, technology companies have had the trust of the public. Pew Research Center asked, what percentage of people say tech companies have a positive or negative impact on the way things are going? Through 2015, we had a nice, healthy, roughly 70% of people said we had a positive impact on the way society is going. And since then, since 2015, through the time they did this in 2019, we got a 21-point drop. 21-point drop. Like, we're nice and steady. People thought technology was good for society. And then 20% of people decided that that's not true. Just decided that that's not true. That's the context we live in. So when I like to talk about big tech and ethics, it leads to the why do we care? We're generally, people on this call are going to be smaller solution providers, or we're engaged much more locally with our business. Why do we care what these big companies are doing? And I say that because they broke everything. That's the reason that I want to start with the reason we care, is because they have done a great job on profiting while they are destroying the public trust in the concept of technology. They're still doing great. Let's just call it out. They're doing really, really well. Facebook made a bunch of announcements yesterday and were wildly rewarded in their stock price on the moves that they're making in the small business space. If you'll catch it on today's show, they announced a series of things called Facebook Shops. So now small businesses can go ahead and set up their entire online e-commerce right on the Facebook platform. Yay, Facebook now not only owns the digital advertising, but now they can own the e-commerce platform as well. What can we do? Why do we care as small companies? I actually think that you're in a position, because you are well-positioned with your customers, you're actually really well-positioned against that, to stand on the other side of that and what they can do. I think there's a lot of different areas for that. And I want to introduce a starting point for this framework. If you're not familiar with the Contract for the Web, they're contractfortheweb.org. This is Tim Berners-Lee, one of the founders of the internet, has come up with these ideas of principles of implementation around the internet, the way that we should behave and act on the internet. There's guidelines for governments, there's guidelines for citizens, but I want to dive into those company ones, because at a very high level, they seem really big, right? Like, make the internet affordable and accessible to everyone. Respect and protect people's privacy and personal trust to build online trust. Develop technologies that support the best interests of humanity and challenge the worst. And you go, wait a second, does that mean me? And I go, yeah, this is actually an outline for consulting opportunities. Let's double click for a moment into respect and protect people's privacy. What that means is you can go work with your customers to understand what data they are collecting, what data they are using in their own organizations on their customers, right? So say you have a customer that is in manufacturing, right? Do they keep a customer database? Well, what information do they keep in the customer database? Do they keep buying habits? Are they collecting more data than they need to, or is it just the data that they should? What information from a privacy perspective are they publishing? What policies do they have that? We always come at this from a very negative time perspective. If you're European, you've probably dealt with GDPR. Now in the States, we're dealing with the California Privacy Act. You're looking at this from the, oh, I have to get my customers to a compliant state. I'm actually challenging to say that what this trend lets you do actually is look at this and say, how can I make this a competitive differentiator for my customer and for me, that we're going to be a company that actually stands for something, that engages our customers in a way that helps them do better? And they're doing it not just because it's a good thing to do, but actually because it makes you competitive. because you're able to say, these are the things in the way that we think about data, and we're only collecting the data that we need to. We've given it some actual thought. Or, for example, say you're in that area of developed technologies that supports the best in humanity. Again, if you double-click into the principles, and you should, because there's lots of great ideas, it outlines ways of thinking about it. How do you measure that? Well, we can actually measure some of that. You can measure your impact of your technologies, the way you create jobs, or you create economic growth, or you allow people to do things that they can't. You can actually start getting into those ways of doing it. I think there's in particular with some of our vendor partners, I think there's really great opportunities on internet affordability and accessibility. This current time has really exposed some of the discrepancies in internet access and what that means. If you're a telco provider or have a telco provider partner, this is a great opportunity to be working with them and helping make sure that that technology is available. In the US, 1 in 4 Americans does not currently have high-speed internet access to be able to access resources. And as we have clearly seen, that is incredibly necessary, particularly now. That's an opportunity. We should be encouraging these companies and pushing them to do a better job of making that available. Because if I rephrase that, say 1 in 4 Americans cannot consume your services or your customers' services, that's a very different way of looking at it. Do we want to limit 25% of the market? No. And by the way, internet security falls completely into this. Security is not necessarily just a way of talking about the negatives. It actually enables everyone to be engaged in privacy, be able to access securely and work well. So I actually look at this and I say, I think ethical behavior is an opportunity, particularly because we're in an environment where trust shouldn't be assumed anymore. We had a really nice run, long run, where technology was just implicitly trusted. We need to recognize that that isn't the case anymore. And this is a great way for you as a services company to align with your customer. It moves you. We always talk about being on the same side of the table as our customers. It's why back in the early days of managed services, we liked the model so much, because the idea was to incentivize ourselves based on the outcomes, and we're on the same side as our customer. Well, here is another way of saying, I am aligning with you because I am interested in understanding the actual implications of these technologies on you and your customers down the road. I look and say, this is an absolute opportunity, but it is why you've got to understand what's going on with these companies. So my other next one that I love talking about is regulation. And this is, again, one of those areas where everybody groans and say, what do you mean? You're talking about regulation, Dave? Yes. I want to, again, throw out some of the realities of the time we live in. And this, for me, is an area where I don't think we're talking enough about it. This is the landscape at a big, high level. And by the way, this is just stuff that I pulled. This is my last couple of weeks of discussions around regulation, stories that I've been covering. Wall Street Journal announced that the feds and the states are likely to sue Google on antitrust. This came out just the past couple of days. This came out on the 15th. France has announced that, yes, they are going to move forward with their digital tax, regardless of any influence from other directions. Tech giants, not only are they just managing to destroy our trust, but they're doing even more and making even more money right now. The EU has announced that, yes, they are restarting their work as it relates to big tech. Regulation is coming, and I know this, right? So I hear all the time when I get into regulation, lots of small people say, you know what, Dave, I get it. There's lots of stuff that needs to happen, but I'm a small company. Regulation doesn't affect me. Well, I want to tell you a story. I want to talk a little bit about what happened in Louisiana. If you haven't been following these series of stories, they date back into last year. So last summer, Louisiana had a series of ransomware attacks across the state government. And that's a state government, local municipalities. It was really a big deal. They were really, really badly impacted by a number of ransomware incidents. different various businesses or business units for the government or government agencies were all knocked offline. Things like the Department of Motor Vehicles was offline. The state of the city of New Orleans itself had to declare a state of emergency following a cyber attack because most of the city government was shut down. This was a massive undertaking for them to react to this coordinated series of attacks. Some of them were small incidents, some of them were large incidents, some of them were not coordinated. They were just ravaged by ransomware issues. That's what happened. They managed to get behind it. But then when we dig into that, what we actually find was one of the people that was doing the coordination of this was the Louisiana Secretary of State, a man by the name of Kyle Ardoin. Now, Secretary Ardoin is not a legislator per se. He's the Secretary of State. His job is to help coordinate a lot of these pieces and work across the state for business opportunities, for help coordination. And he was the one coordinating with the FBI in terms of the response to that. So became very well-versed in what's going on from a cybersecurity perspective, and additionally became very versed on the ecosystem of managed services providers, managed security solution providers or service providers, and the differences between the two of them. And he came to discover during the course of his work that most of these small agencies were all serviced by either, in a few cases, MSSPs, but in most cases, MSPs. That service providers were the ones, because these were all essentially small business. These local governments, the DMV or the local assessor's offices, all of these little agencies were all acting like small businesses, and they had outsourced their IT appropriately to a managed services provider, right? Makes perfect sense. Well, in speaking with the Secretary of State, come to find out that he discovered that many of these were all underserved by their MSPs. In many cases, they were, underserved from a security perspective. And some of those MSPs were, in fact, scared to bring up security. I did an interview with the Secretary of State on March 9th as a follow-up to his meeting with fellow secretaries of state, where he blasted managed services providers. Literally came out and said, managed services providers are part of the problem. They are not necessarily serving our organizations, our governments correctly. They are not advising well on security, and they are in a position that is really causing us problems. He understands our space, okay? Totally understands our space, understands the needs of this. And what he then went on to say is he was working with his legislature to introduce legislation to require MSPs and MSSPs to register with his office. Now, I'm going to pause for a quick moment and go, and Secretary Ardoin is a pro-business Republican, okay? That's where he's coming from. That's what he's looking at. Now, he's reached out. He's working with some of the industry trade organizations to try and define those well and work with industry. He's got a smart thinking on it, but his statement was, if the industry doesn't regulate itself, we have to step in. Dan, thank you for mentioning it. You're exactly right. Dan mentions the simultaneous multi-city takedown of multiple city governments in the state of Texas that were leveraging an MSP. That's exactly how it happens. So these are areas where we're definitely going to see new investment. So I ask, why do you care? You care because regulation is coming. It is coming for our space because we're not doing it ourselves. I've always made the statement that are in a position as an industry where we need to decide how we want to be regulated. Do we want to be regulated like plumbers, like people that repair cars? Do we want to have like a certificate-based system? Or do we want to move towards a lawyer, doctor, accountant style model? We're going to have to choose that. And let me observe that the vendors in our space have absolutely no interest in this. They're going to ignore it because it is a barrier to them selling. They want to sell to anybody that will buy their software. That's the case, period. The opportunity here is that anybody that embraces this and starts thinking this way and starts building toward it will elevate their game as this moves forward. Everybody decries all the time how anybody can be an IT guy and you're competing with Jimmy Joe Bob down the street. Well, this is actually how you start differentiating your real business from those other businesses. And if you're waiting around for the big vendors to do this, they are not motivated to get involved in this. It is not going to help them. It will help service providers that do this, but it's not going to help them. And either we can let it happen to us or we can take something about it. So this is why I'm so focused on regulation as an area that we need to talk about. I would be remiss if I did not go from regulation into security and talk some about security. Happens all the time. I can, again, pull headline after headline after headline on security. I could just do this all day long. And in fact, I do. On the podcast, I pull multiple security stories. I pull security stories because I think they're useful for you as a solution provider to have examples to take to your customers. And I also think it's really important for you to hear what's hitting the mainstream news, what's hitting at that level. So I'm going to start by saying, look, you got to get your security house in order. You're going to go out of business if you don't. I really mean this. Like, you need to spend time on this because I've got examples on this. But I want to also talk about the practicality of this from the perspective. I'm going to pull this story. This is from earlier this year, and it is what happened to somebody who did not do their security well. This is exactly what happened. The way it works is perpetrator attacked a customer of an MSP. They successfully managed to phish the environment and convinced the accounting department to transfer $1.7 million into another, you know, into somebody else's account. Successfully were phished. So the customer sued. They sued their MSP and they went back and sued them. And what was interesting about it is that when we went into the actual legal brief for this, the Boardman, who was suing Boardman Molded Products, suing Involta LLC, went and go ahead and quoted their contract in the lawsuit. Boardman relied upon the representations of Involta and accepted Involta's offer to let Boardman's IT staff focus on innovation and business-oriented tasks, while Involta was to protect Boardman's bottom line with secure, highly available services hosted in Involta's enterprise-class facilities. They pulled it from the contract language. That should make everybody pause for a moment and go, does my contract say things like that? Because if it does, that's exactly where the customers are going to be coming at. Why do you care? Because the days of the trusted advisor are dead. I'm declaring them absolutely dead. I think this is long gone. It is not the reality anymore. 61% of channel partners are transforming their organizations to focus on business outcomes. That's up from 3 years before. But 78% of customers want that. That's where it really comes from. So I say, see, regulation is coming. We've got an outline for this because the lawyers are also coming. I've had conversations with solution providers who've said things like, I couldn't get my security and compliance insurance renewed or my cybersecurity insurance renewed because the lawyers denied it because I was running software on-prem. The lawyers are getting involved. The regulators are getting involved. James, you ask a really great question. Do I really think we as an MSP collective will have a say in how we regulate? In his opinion, it may end up varying by state. I absolutely think we have a say in this. I absolutely think we do. I think that we collectively need to push our trade associations, such as CompTIA or MSP Alliance or whatever one we want to get involved in, and make them step up to this at some level because it is in collectively the IT space's best interest. I think we have to be working with legislators. I use Secretary Ardoin as an example. He says in the interview, he wants to work with the industry. Regulators don't want to do this on their own, but if we ignore it and we don't get involved, they will do it to us. I totally believe that we can do something about this. We just have to spend some time on it. And we have to recognize that it is an actual real threat and it is important for us to get involved. So I do totally believe that. Because I think from a security perspective, I'm looking at this not just from the perspective of, oh, there's an opportunity here, because absolutely we can sell security solutions. Oh, and by the way, it's the right thing to do. But I also think it's an actual significant threat. The other thing I want to talk about is I want to talk a little bit about these business practices and opportunity stories that I think that are out there. I think there's a lot of underserved stuff in terms of the way that I look at the news. And I think that there's a lot of areas that we can get into. Now, pre the current situation, I would have held up this slide, right? That ZDNet has put a bunch of information saying CIOs are concerned IT is not providing enough of a competitive edge. I think that's still true. I've been making the statement that I think the current situation is an accelerant to any previous trends. I think right now, because of what we're seeing in the current market, the new reality, whatever we want to call it, the current situation means that IT is already more important. We've heard lots of people say that this is IT's time to shine. This is technology's time to shine. There's real opportunity here. I think that's all kind of true. But I also think people are looking and saying it better be delivering for me. I also would be remiss if I didn't say, I actually think that there are some new interesting opportunities that are opening up. Now, again, these are just stuff from the past couple of days. I did a couple more just for today's podcast that'll come out today. There are real opportunities both in software and solutions that are coming out about this. Salesforce just announced some new features to their product line. ServiceNow did the same thing. There's opportunities in the way the technology is being used. The Information just did a piece talking about how the technologies that can be used to manage office space have shot up in importance because now we have to be much more diligent about the way space is laid out. I think there's all kinds of opportunities there. We're seeing that massive shift in the work from home. Twitter and then Square as well, because I will observe Jack Dorsey as CEO of both of those at the same time. Has told employees they're going to be able to work from home forever. Just that's the way that they're going to be able to do it, that they're expecting that. Lots of businesses are taking a look at their office space and saying, you know, we spend an awful lot of money on office space. Are we really getting our value to this? Are we really getting all of what we need out of this? And I think that there is real opportunity for technology providers to figure this bit out. I am not an opportunity porn kind of person saying there's opportunity everywhere. I think that you've got to be realistic about the current situation, and I've done a bunch of stuff around that. You need to understand that not all businesses are going to be able to take advantage of it. You're going to have to link very closely with their current situation. But by the way, that's where your strength is understanding your customer's need, moving in and solving. So I think there's real opportunity there. I'm going to throw you a resource, one of the ones that I've noticed out there. Got a second that is brand new that came out today. But if you haven't seen it, the Back to Work Toolkit at backtoworktoolkit.com is a resource that allows you to get all the policies, procedures, information, the way that you take companies back to work has all been put together. It was put together by a venture capital group that was working with the Seattle-based technology companies, retail companies, aerospace companies to come up with those collective guidelines. And they gave it out to the community because they think it's something that you can do. There's always opportunities in these announcements to go find resources or find opportunities. So I'm pointing you to this particular one because it's got a lot of great resources for your own business, but also stuff that you can leverage with your customers. And by the way, the news constantly gives me selling opportunities. Like just all the time, there's new stuff that I could go out and take to customers. So again, one just from a couple of days ago, May 13th, covered on my podcast. Microsoft has made one more step towards phasing out all the 32-bit PC support. You're not able to buy 32-bit Windows anymore on OEM equipment. The OEM manufacturers can't sell that anymore. We're moving into the phasing out. I see that as another sales opportunity. I know based on the data, there's still a ton of 32-bit Windows out there. There's a ton of applications out there. Well, the phases of that being supported, we are now in there. So I ask the question over and over and over again, why do we care? These kinds of news stories, they make you money. That's what you find. These are revenue opportunities. These are areas where you can go out and mine this stuff. And you can take these opportunities back to your customers with something very timely and relevant and catch these trends as they're happening. So that's why I think that this is a category of news stories that I'm super interested about. Now I'm going to tell you about two I don't care about and why I don't care about. Our industry loves M&A right now. They love M&A. They love talking about who's buying who and who's investing in who and what the ownership is and all that stuff. Let me give you an example, and I'm intentionally picked this example to not pick on any particular vendor right now. Zoom just bought Keybase as part of their 90-day security push. It's a good buy for them. Makes total sense, right? It's Keybase is the ability to do online identities. They also have a really great end-to-end encryption tool. Makes perfect sense, right? I get it entirely. And you know what? I didn't do this story on my podcast. Why? Because nothing changed. Nothing changed from the before to the after, right? They bought something. Cool. There's no new features available. They haven't done anything. There's no revenue opportunity at the M&A. The only thing you can really do at best is you can do something to understand their strategy. Zoom, in that case, is doing what they promised to do. They said for 90 days, they were going to spend a bunch of time on security or security investments, and they were going to lock everything down, and they were going to respond to that. In my mind, they've actually delivered on it. I think they've done a really, really nice job in terms of delivering on their security promises. But for any of us in services, nothing changed. Just nothing changed. So I don't really care that much. I care about the potential. But as we've seen time and time again, they don't necessarily do anything with it. If they're not doing it for a particular reason, it makes a lot of sense. So let me actually take a moment, and I want to tell you the filter that I put up. This graphic comes from Wikipedia. Like, this is Creative Commons stuff that I've taken the startup financing cycle, and I always look at the various companies and where they are. And I put them through on this lens to try and understand, right? To try and think about who they are. Because we can follow the money and we can understand where companies are going. So ready? We're going to have some fun. I'm going to put up all of our favorites on this measurement. So let's take a look at our favorite ecosystem, our own, the managed services space. And I can tell you a lot about what these companies are doing just based on their financing. Everyone's very enthusiastic about the Synchro and the Ninja guys. I see this all over the place. Why? They're very founder-driven. They're founder-driven. They are trying, they are somewhere in that valley of death period. They're trying to get from a business to true profitability, right? They're somewhere in there. There's that little triangle there, right, between break even and where they move into venture capital piece, where it is like heaven bliss for a small business owner of that kind, because they are making money, they're revenue positive, and they own their own destiny. They're in that point. Those companies, they react really well to their customer requirements because they're totally close. They're very founder driven. They may have some seed money, they may have some angels involved, but it is a small business essentially, right? That's the reason why we see that level of investment. If I go look at some of the bigger players, ConnectWise, Datto, Kaseya, they're all in that VC, private equity, that piece. I can tell you exactly what they're doing. They're doing revenue roll-ups. They like to buy companies because their job is to expand revenue. I know based on their investors that all of their moves are about buying new things to turn around and selling to you. That's what they do. And then at some point, they're going to move into the IPO market, and then they will become subject to the public market facing, right? And depending on where they are in that space and where they're trying to do with it from their stock position, we can see again the same kind of thing. They're going to be looking at revenue growth. They're going to be driving based on that. The closer you are to the left-hand side of this, the much more you are founder-driven and thus, you know, the core creative vision of something versus the finance guys getting involved. Now, I mean this entirely as statements of fact. I'm not judging this. This is completely obvious. Am I surprised at all to see these companies are focused on those kinds of things? No, because the money has to, I have to follow the money. What they're trying to do is they're trying to optimize the business model and they're trying to make more revenue out of it. And that's what they're trying to do. That's what they're in the business of. And you have to put your lens on. On the left-hand side, the easiest way for them to grow is to add stuff and acquire customers. In some cases, particularly you see it in these more developed pieces, the easiest way for them to grow is sell more things to their existing customers and expand revenue. That's going to be the way that they do that. That's why they're going around buying things and turning around selling it to you. It's also why they're going to potentially de-emphasize building out on their existing things, because that doesn't drive revenue. So that's that. I also say that I don't care about tools. I just don't care that much. I'm not interested anymore in which RMM is anybody using or why they're using that particular piece. And I'll tell you why. Here's the lens that I put on why I don't care that much of tools. I have this typical MSP profit and loss slide that I put out. And I use this when I talk to vendors in particular, but there's no secret to it, right? You should look at this and go, yeah, kind of makes sense. It's a typical MSP profit and loss, kind of an average. I'm intending a typical solution provider. I know 93% of MSPs are below $5 million in revenue. So they kind of look like this, generally. I know that your tools are a very small percentage of your costs and of your overall structure. It's just not that big a deal. It's not that big. You can make way bigger impacts in terms of the way that your business is run by getting your salespeople to sell more, or the way your strategy of service offerings and what you've bundled together in your services, because that's around your salaries and the way you do those people. The technology tools themselves, just not that big a portion of your revenue. So I'm following the money. I'm following the money in your business and saying, okay, it's not that huge a bit. It's in the tools vendor's best interest to focus on that, but it's not actually in the solution provider best interest. When I talk about opportunity, I'm talking about labor and consulting and project and all stuff that takes intellectual prowess, not stuff that takes tools. It kind of doesn't matter which one you buy. If you have one, great. And in some cases, you don't even need one. I can think of one presenter on this particular conference who runs a very successful MSP that has not bought into all of the tools garbage, doesn't have a ton of these. So these are kind of the big trends and stuff that I talk about. So I'm going to throw it, if you like this kind of content, if you want a lens on news and what's going on, I'm going to ask, please go to my website at msbradio.com, sign up for the podcast. It is 5 minutes. 5 minutes a day. It's on all your podcatchers. You can listen to it on your Amazon devices. Find it anywhere that you find podcatchers. I do some YouTube videos as well, particularly for editorial content, which I do release on the podcast. And I have intentionally left time for you guys to ask me about any story in the news, what I think about it, any trend, any acquisition. I'll break it down for you. I've left that time open. And I will additionally leave my contact information up. And I'm going to drink a glass of water.
Well, I say, holy smokes, Batman.
I so move fast.
My brain is full. I do have to say, you know, one of the things I mentioned on the Killing It podcast was this story with Ardawan that I sort of feel like the Borg have entered our quadrant.
Oh, totally. Totally.
When the politicians know you exist, it can only one thing can come out of that. Legislation.
Yeah, and it's the like, we have to do something about it. We collectively have to do something about it. And so I look and say, you know, I've been bemoaning this problem for a while. I've been talking about regulation. And ultimately, you know, everybody asked me, Dave, why are you doing what you're doing? I said, I looked around our media landscape and I sort of said, you know what? They're not taking this on. The media that covers our space is not interested in these issues that I've been talking about. I can complain about it, or I can start providing information and I can start talking about it, getting the conversation going, bringing new ideas to the space, and then we can start collectively working on it. But somebody's got to start talking about it. So that's what I do.
Right. Well, another thing is, and you know, we have no sponsors here.
Nope, we are vendor free.
a lot of the media in our space is controlled by the vendors in our space. Not controlled, but you know what I mean.
Well, I'm not going to name names so much, but I do actually put them into kind of two buckets as a general when I think about the media space. There's now a third because I've got my business in MSP Radio. But if you think about the media space, there are several media companies that are actually events businesses. Their real business and the way they make a lot of money is on putting on events and getting vendors to sponsor them and getting rooms full of solution providers to show up to get sold to. That's their actual business. They may do great case study work. They do journalism. But if I dig into their revenues, where they're really interested in growing is lead gen. They are lead gen operations. That's not a bad thing. It's push the space, right? There's one particular media company that we all kind of laugh about as vendors, knowing that I can just, if I need an award, I can go buy one. That's what they do. I just spend a bunch of money and I can win an award and I can use that in my press and I can start doing content generated, you know, content marketing, and I can drive all that stuff out. And I just look and say, who speaks for the solution providers? It's not necessarily that, because if their revenues is driven by the vendor side, we have to at least acknowledge that. That does not mean they don't deliver value. I want to be clear on that, because they do deliver value. You just have to understand what that value is and how they make it.
Well, and in a related story, we've covered the whole question about lobbying. And
yes.
You know, I would love for CompTIA to step up and represent us as legislation is formed. And, you know,
yep.
The last real company that I worked for, and a lot of people don't know this, my last real job with a W-2, I worked for a company that tracked legislation online and sold subscriptions to lobbyists and state agencies.
Yep.
That's what I did for a living before I went on my own. But, you know, CompTIA, they used to lobby real heavily at the small end of the SMB space. That's not the case anymore.
They lobby very heavily at the big end of the space. And look, that because we have to put, if we could take a moment and we turn it around and go, that's also on us. We haven't pushed them,
right?
We as solution providers have not pushed them. We have not raised that. We've had this conversation on Killing It. I've done a number of stories on business tech around the right to repair. And, you know, I amplified some opinions by some solution providers, and CompTIA backed off on their positioning. They stopped lobbying on right to repair because they were, in my mind, they were on the wrong side of it because they were lobbying for the big companies. But, you know, we made noise about it and they made a change. It shows the power of exposing this kind of stuff, but it means we have to be doing it. I see a question. Ken's throwing me a great question here. So what do I see as the biggest external threat to SMB solution providers currently and coming? Well, I have to say, like, before sort of March 1st, my answer would have been very different than it is right now. I have to be realistic and say, like, I think the biggest external threat right now is the new norm. And I'm going to be a bit of a bummer for a minute. I hope everybody will bear with me, because I'm trying to go with, because my interest in this is I want everyone to survive. Jay talked yesterday about the fact that the projections in the 60% likely scenario is that 25% of solution providers are going to go out of business. That's really bad. It's really bad. It's really scary. The reason I coined this term optimism porn, because I feel like there's a lot of vendors, there's a lot of thought leaders in the space that come out and say statements like, this is a great time. There's so much opportunity. This is tech's time to shine. And they don't finish the thought. The reality of the situation is we're facing an economic situation that is, we use the cliche word unprecedented. It's unprecedented in that, A, we don't quite know how to track it, and we have bad data necessarily telling us. We can't see a lot out. But if we take things like Forrester's data, which tells us that, you know, there's this downtime, we can take Service Leadership's data, which is in, if you haven't used their rapid recovery guide, please go get it. There's links in my show notes on that. And Will, Carl, we can supply the links to that as well. I've covered on here, you know, covered on the Business Tech. It's a huge, like 57-page document where Service Leadership is projected out. You know, they've actually looked at the projections based on a bust economy, like a downtime based on a recession. They don't see revenues returning for solution providers to 2019 levels, but until like 2024. I'm going to say again, a bummer fact, the record for fastest vaccine ever created was 4 years. That's the standing record for a vaccine. Now, I got that from a buddy of mine who is works for the National Institute of Health. He was given it on background, so I won't name him. But what he also said is, look, he then followed and says, look, there's never been a collective investment in looking for a vaccine or the new technologies that are allowing us to move faster. He goes, so I think it'll be better than that. 4 years is the way that, and because we've never thrown this much resources at finding a vaccine. But when I couple all of this together, I look and say, all right, I think this is going to go for a little while. Now, what I also then look and say is I'm also seeing all of this data that's coming out that's from solution providers that are saying, hey, my March was pretty good, right? Like I'm taking on new customers. I'm doing the work from home stuff. And I think that's all a sugar high. I think we don't know the damage to the economy and we don't know the ripple effects of what's happening. So I look at the market and I say, look, you can't tell me that 30 million Americans out of work is not slowing down stuff. And I mean, I don't even know, like the amount of the ecosystem of just sports alone being offline is something like, you know, $100 million or some crazy number of just revenue. $100 billion in revenue in just the ecosystem around it, not just the sports leagues, but all of the bits that serve them. I did on my editorial that I did recently, I talked about the fact that I want people to be looking at their customer's customer. You're really good at this because you already understand the model as a solution provider. If you serve lawyers, right? You serve the legal profession. I want you to go one deeper and I want you to understand the legal profession to what industries. If you're in the legal profession that serves entertainment, you could be good if you're serving like, you know, the kinds of content that can be created right now, or you could be in real trouble where they're serving entertainment that is completely offline, you know, booking agents for venues and bands and all that kind of, or restaurants or any of that kind of stuff. They're going to see an impact of that and it's going to flow through the economy. I think tech is well positioned to ride it out, but I am not sitting over here going like, everything's great. I want you to be very pessimistic from a planning perspective and very optimistic in your long-term thinking because it will get better. And there are ways you can make a difference. And I think you can do right by customers, but I want you to be super conservative on the way you run your business. So when you say like the biggest external threat, I think it's that. I think by far, that's the biggest thing right now. In terms of coming, I would say, you know, anything that was a threat beforehand is accelerated. I think my regulation stuff is coming. I think it's going to come faster than we want because I think there's going to be scrutiny of technology in general. It's been a lifeline for people in restarting their businesses, but I think that we will start getting attention to that as we get into some level of new operations. I think the security stuff is the other bit that is an accelerant to that. I have to just sort of quip and go, I sort of don't understand why ransomware is still a thing, because we have all the tools to defeat it, and why it's still out there. Like, I just sort of wonder why this is still a thing, because we can deal, we know how to deal with it, but it's still clearly still a thing. And then when I double click into it and I start digging on it, it's because, well, they make a ton of money, right? So I think security is the other big area that there's more organized cybercrime that we're not aware of, that we know is accelerating in the current situation, that I think is going to get worse. And then the other thing, and I'm going to just throw this out because I think we as an industry need to be looking at it. I worry about the private equity money in our space being bad for our space. I talked about looking at people from a financial perspective and where I think things are, you know, how I can understand where these companies are going. And I talked about big tools providers. They are in the business right now of building their revenue, right? They want to show growth in revenue. They want to show growth in profitability. The best way for them to do that is buy things and resell it to you. I worry about the core technologies stagnating and people getting a little too reliant on that. I'm just going to give you a list of things that I go, I think we should have a solution to this, and we don't. Where's my proper Mac management? Where's my Chromebook management? Why isn't phone management easy to do? Where's my cloud management? Like, where are these other bits that I see in enterprise that I don't really see flowing into our ecosystem as much as I would? And so I actually think that that's kind of a threat to that. Ken then wants also the follow on, where do I think the opportunities are? For me, again, if I'm backing up to current, it's helping people. I actually think there's massive opportunity in helping customers in the changes, right? There's all kinds of stuff that needs to get done besides just getting work from home and convert over. I think that's a huge opportunity. I think there's opportunities in security. I think there's a massive opportunity in terms of getting into all of those business value conversations. Listen to a bunch of Killing It episodes because I loathe digital transformation, but there's something there, in terms of the idea of converting people over. So I think that those are some of those other ones. And then Brian asks a great state. Datto hasn't purchased anything in a while, is really focusing on their core services, making them better and growing with existing products and services. My thoughts. Sure. I guess my thought is this, is that, so I'm not a Datto partner and I don't sell these things, and I don't sell these things anymore. They haven't done anything that moves me, if you know what I mean. There's nothing that I look and say has made a dramatic difference. I would love for somebody to, this is where I always quip the tell me where I'm wrong, and maybe this is take it off. Maybe you have to go deeper and take it off lines. Is that you've got to understand that I'm looking for some kind of leap in terms of a thing that they've built, not just incremental changes, because I don't think that those are driving anywhere. And I haven't seen. I commend everybody for making their core stuff work, but I want their core stuff to get a lot better and jump somewhere. And I haven't seen that. You guys are getting chatty now. I love it. Mark said, optimists see realists as pessimists. We need to operate with a long-term view and with hope, but overly optimistic expectations are a recipe for defeat in my view. Spot on, man. I'm right there with you. It's called the Stockdale Paradox. I know Ryan talked about that yesterday in his presentation, this idea that to survive bad times that Admiral Stockdale talked about, you have to both reconcile the idea of your current reality with a long-term belief that you will get there. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode. I will talk to you with a regular episode tomorrow.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
I know how to run a hair salon, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.